This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 15th of December 2023. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 15th of December. So, in the studio today, your readers are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: EV Superhub plan gets the green light, fire destroyed heritage buses, and Austin statue proposal backed by college head. So, Nikki, maybe have the story behind the first headline, please.
Which is the EV Superhub plan gets the green light. Winchester councillors snubbed advice from their own planning officers to approve plans for one of the largest car charging hubs in the country. The City Council Planning Committee on Tuesday was being urged to reject the proposal by Basingstoke-based Instavolt for the field near the A34 at Three Maids Hill. Planning officers said it would be developed in the countryside and against council policy, but councillors took the view that providing charging points for electric vehicles was more important. Councillor Danny Lee, Green Party, said, "We're in a climate crisis and we have a shortage of chargers. We need to encourage the use of electric vehicles. The site looks like it was made for this. It's oven ready." The hub will provide charging for 41 vehicles, as well as a restaurant, toilets and play area for children. Construction work is due to begin on the site in the new year. The main vehicle charging station will have 33 car charging bays, 4 large van charging bays, 4 drive-through charging bays for large stroke towing vehicles, and 3 designated disabled bays. We'll also have a restaurant. A planning row had broken out after Winchester City Council planning officers recommended a development for refusal. However, the planning committee agreed to permit the scheme on Tuesday, December the 12th. Speaking after the decision, Instavolt CEO Adrian Keane said, "The right decision was made by the council, and we can now press ahead to deliver this innovative and forward-thinking plan. It is through having reliable and well-positioned EV charging hubs that will encourage people to make the switch to more environmentally friendly and sustainable way to travel further than their local neighbourhood. We understand the importance of on-site amenities, and they'll include food, drink and toilets. We'll also be improving leisure options for drivers on our network, including plenty of open green space and a play park for energetic children. It's a great use of the site that otherwise could be seen as a waste facility on it. As well as providing substantial charging for cars, there will be the provision of long bays for larger vehicles. We also understand how important it is to ensure our network is suitable for everyone, which is why our plans include designs to create accessibility for all." Councillor Kelsey Lerney, Cabinet Member for the Climate Emergency, spoke to the committee about the council's need for charging points. She added, "I would ask the committee to support this as part of the council's wider aims. The meeting heard that an anaerobic digestion facility had been permitted to the north of the site and that construction had started."
Fire destroyed heritage buses. 8 heritage buses have been destroyed in a devastating fire in a group of industrial units near Andover. More than 10 emergency calls alerted Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service to the fire shortly after 2 a.m. on Friday, December the 8th, at the farm in Penton Mewsey. One of the buses destroyed was a Friends of King Alfred Buses, Faux KAB, around groundbreaking 1950 Leyland Olympic JAA708. It was Hampshire's first and underfloor engine bus, rescued from Ireland and lovingly restored over many years before its relaunch in 2012. This was the only King Alfred bus that was in the building at the time. The 7 other buses belonged to the Faux Cab's members and fellow preservationists. They included four Hanson Dorset buses and a luxury coach. A FOCAB member said they'd been working on one of the buses for 15 years. James Freeman, chairman of the FOCAB, said, "This is an appalling disaster and only underlines the importance of FOCAB's never-ending quest to find a long-term safe home for its collection. The fire appears to have started elsewhere in another unit and was well alight by 1:30 a.m. By the time I arrived on the site, there was little left but the walls and roof of structure. The intensity of the fire was such that people living several miles away were woken by exploding fuel tanks and the like. Fire crews attended from all across Hampshire and from Wiltshire. Whilst it is fortunate that no one was hurt, we now must come to terms with the loss of so many valuable, irreplaceable buses and coaches. We send our heartfelt sympathies to the owners who have lost their prized vehicles." A fire service spokesman said, "Teams have been using jets, hose reels and compressed air foam solution to douse the flames and extinguish the fire. The incident has now been scaled down with relief crews from Fareham, Whitchurch and Alton and Fordingbridge attending to take over from the firefighters who were first on scene." And there is a photograph of these buses, and it really is so sad, absolutely devastation.
Austin statue proposal backed by the college head. Plans for a statue of Jane Austen to mark 250 years since her birth have received backing from the headmaster of Winchester College. The statue is being proposed by Winchester Cathedral, with the hope of it being sited in the Inner Close during the milestone year 2025, which is the 250th anniversary of her birth. Winchester Cathedral is the mother church of the Diocese of Winchester, which covers all of Jane Austen's Hampshire. Austen was born in Hampshire and spent most of her life here. She was buried in Winchester Cathedral, where a plaque marks her resting place. To emphasize her place in the city, the cathedral is working in partnership with Winchester College. The college has produced a booklet which begins to explore the connection between Austen and the city, with her connections with Winchester strengthened by six of her nephews being Wykamists, pupils at the college. It's available from the college's treasury. Headmaster of Winchester College, Elizabeth Stone, said, "The installation of this memorial is an opportunity to celebrate one of the giants of English literature, who gave us one of the earliest and fullest expressions of a woman's observations of the world." Jane Austen had many connections with the college and cathedral. Her recognition will bring the rich history of our city even more fully to life, to the benefit of residents and visitors alike. In the absence of a definitive portrait of Jane Austen, her admirers today form very different impressions of what she was like. The statue has been designed by Martin Jennings, who is best known for his statue of Sir John Betjeman at St. Pancras Station, and twice winning the Marsh Award for Excellence in Public Sculpture. A previous plan for a Jane Austen statue, also by Martin Jennings, was scrapped in 2019 after the design received criticism. Professor Paul O'Brien, author of The Real Jane Austen, said, "The Jane Austen maquette is truly wonderful. It captures Austen's sparkling intelligence, her slender, upright figure, her lightness of touch, as we see in her novels, and her playfulness." The statue will cost £100,000, and a total of £82,000 has been raised so far, with £10,000 coming from both Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council, and the rest from private donations. And this is accompanied by a couple of photographs, one showing the proposal for the statue, and the other is the front piece of the booklet that's been produced, Jane Austen and Winchester, an introduction.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. And now we continue with the death announcements and then Christian comment, letters, Chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements this week. Barrett, Margaret Ann Barrett, peacefully at Winchester Hospital, aged 93. Christie, Eve Dolores Rosemary Christie, died on the 10th of December, aged 91. Cousins, Flight Lieutenant Ronald William Cousins, DFC, died peacefully at home, aged 102. Edwards, Major John C. Edwards, retired, at St. Giles View Nursing Home on the 6th of December. Jeffries, Margaret Ellen Jeffries, died peacefully on the 3rd of December, aged 92. Makin, Lieutenant Colonel John Dillon Makin, died peacefully at Abbots Barton Care Home, aged 92. Mitchell, David Mitchell, died peacefully on the 25th of November, aged 84. Morgan, Kate Morgan, died peacefully at St. Giles View Nursing Home, aged 85. Parsons, Audrey Parsons, died peacefully in hospital on the 4th of December, aged 98. Pollock Gore, William Duncan Joseph Pollock Gore, died on the 17th of November, aged 96. Wilson, Anthony Wilson, died on the 3rd of December, aged 88. And Ray, Andrew Ray, died peacefully on the 30th of November, aged 68. And now, Andrew, you've got a Christian comment, please.
And this week's Christian comment is entitled The Living Tradition of Carols and is written by Rosemary Baker. And I must admit, I was quite surprised by its content. So, here we are, approaching the third week of Advent, getting nearer to Christmas itself. The Christmas cards have started to arrive. I haven't found my store of leftover cards yet, but I do have some new ones as well. I couldn't help noticing that four out of the five that came today had a line from A Christmas Carol on the front. Rehearsals for choirs have already begun. Indeed, some choir concerts have been held already in our locality. I must admit to being very surprised to hear on the news that we might be singing our carols incorrectly. Apparently, English Heritage have done an intensive investigation and have found that, quote, only a fraction, unquote, of traditional carols are being performed correctly, with some even being made up on the spot. While Shepherds Watch Their Flocks by Night has long been a festive favourite for millions, and may be one of the oldest. But have we been singing the tune all wrong? The research reveals that most carols, in fact, never had a correct melody. The current tunes we sing them to only date back to the 19th century, when efforts were made to standardise them. Before this, most had no formal tune, and congregations and soloists were left to improvise on the spot. While Shepherds is now usually sung to the tune Winchester Old, but has been sung to On Inkley Moor Bartat, we may think of many of our carols as being solemn and reflective, but the first carols were actually written to be danced to, and would have been a rather jolly affair. Whether or not we like this idea, it's worth remembering that carols are a living tradition, echoing through the centuries, and should be celebrated in all forms, especially at Christmas. The aim of English Heritage Study is for the British public to reconnect with bygone aspects of festive lore, including the correct melody for carols and the act of dancing to them, perhaps outside a church. Do you have a favourite carol? And what are your reasons for choosing it? Is it the words and their meaning? Most are telling the story of Christ's birth and its relevance to humanity, even if many of us are disconnected from this now. Or perhaps it's the music and the connections the melody makes with the emotional centers in our brains. Perhaps it's the memories it evokes of special occasions in our past or of special people we have sadly lost. My favorite has been for many years, It Came Upon a Midnight Clear. And I find it very relevant for our war-torn world. It's closely followed by Cradled in a Manger Meanly. This was my mother's favorite, for the words, Those who have winter but no Christmas, bringing them peace on earth. However, like many people, and especially those who vote for the nation's favorite carol on classic FM, I'm very taken by O Holy Night and its wonderful music. Christmas carols have a way of connecting us, whatever we believe, churchgoers or not.
Thank you, Andrew. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, please.
And this from Keith Hatter. It's headed Online Unworkable. I refer to the letters from Shirley Smith and Bill Ledbetter, Chronicle November 23. Throughout Hampshire County Council's jurisdiction over highway parking, there must be many people for whom the online system is unworkable for various reasons. I use technology, but there are certain processes from which I am excluded because I am blind. The new visitors parking permit system is one of them. After discussion with HCC and My Permit, the company onto which HCC offloads its responsibility for this matter, I was promised in September that I shall still be issued with paper permits in future. I would urge anyone else in a similar position to make and vigorously pursue such a request. My concerns, however, are that I have yet to receive written confirmation of the above promise, and should it be fulfilled, the system may not recognise paper permits, and my visitors will be subjected to the needless stress of being issued with unwanted penalties. I look forward to being reassured by HCC that this will not happen, and that I shall continue to use paper permits without hitch. And this from Keith Hatter, Arthur Road, Hyde, Winchester.
And Mrs. P. Dollery writes, third class. It isn't only tenants less satisfied with Winchester City Council. Leaseholders are classed as third class citizens when it comes to disasters by WCC. I've lived here for 53 years, and in that time I've had 7 floods from the council properties due to poor maintenance from WCC into my airing cupboard. On Monday, November the 20th, another leaseholder informed me that the water was coming through on the stairwell wall and dripping from an electric light. After several phone calls, the emergency number by tenants and leaseholders, here we are on November the 28th and still nothing has been resolved. Phone calls are always difficult to reach anybody, and when they do answer, the first thing they say is, are you a leaseholder? Then they say that they will be with you in about 2 hours. Nobody comes. After another call by my son, same reply. They will be there in about 2 hours. Nobody came, and here we are on the 28th, and still nobody came to me. They did state they would get back to me or my son. They never have, and I foresee they never will. I have for the fourth time had to take towels, sheets and pillowcases out from the airing cupboard to wash and dry, very difficult in the winter. I was told by WCC to claim on my insurance, although the flood came from a council property. I have tried to contact a councillor for help, but when I phoned, they said the number was not available. Leaseholders have no one to stand in their defence, even though WCC is their landlord. We are far less satisfied and pay for services we do not get. And that's from Mrs. P. Dollery of Winnell Manor Road, Winnell, Winchester.
And our next letter is from Phil Gagg, and it's entitled Traffic Impact. Your correspondent, Simon Lever, is quite right to worry about the impact of traffic going to and from the proposed development at Bushfield Camp. He will be shocked, I am afraid, to know that the developer is proposing far more than the 1,000 cars he refers to. No less than an average of 4,542 new journeys daily throughout the year will be made as a result of this proposal. This means that on many days there may well be over 5,000 additional journeys, and that at busy times there'll be more than 20 additional journeys per minute. Parking for 2,500 would be needed for this volume of additional traffic, unless the developer wants to use the streets of Badger Farm, Oliver's Battery and Compton. It is disappointing the applicants have not come clean and told us this. They have tucked away a lot of bad news in the appendices to their outline application. Not many people will have done the necessary arithmetic. In planning jargon, additional traffic is the difference between do something and do minimum. And the ES Chapter E lists traffic increases on individual roads. 4,542 is the total of additional trips on Badger Farm Road at the access point to the development. I assume the developer is not keen to highlight this number. However, it is very close to the hidden number the developer has used in the climate calculations in Table 8 of Appendix M1 GHG calculations. The developer suggests that emissions from transport will remain the same for 60 years. This seems to ignore not only the Winchester Carbon Neutrality Action Plan, but also the government's Net Zero Development Plan transport profile, and of course, the Climate Change Act of 2020. All the proposals to reduce emissions from transport are weak, and there are no targets for moving away from fossil fuel vehicles. Infrastructure proposed for cycling, walking, and public transport is inadequate and without any firm commitments. As proposed, this development will blow climate targets and is too incompetent to deserve consideration. And that's from Phil Gagg, St. Swithin Street, Winchester.
The next letter is from Bruce Parker at Andover. Austin Statue. I was privileged and delighted to show the actress Joanna Lumley around Winchester Cathedral, and like thousands of other visitors, she was fascinated to hear more of Jane Austen's final journey from College Street through the Close to her burial place in the cathedral's north aisle. Jane Austen had a wicked sense of humour, and I'm quite sure she'd have been tickled pink at the thought of a life-size statue of her on the green by number 9 in the inner close. This statue would be a most fitting memorial to one of Hampshire's most illustrious ladies, and I don't doubt countless visitors from around the world will be sending back pictures of themselves standing beside her. And that letter's from Bruce Parker, Appleshaw, Andover.
And this from Tim Gibbons, headed Campaign to Save Theatre Royal. Barbara Carpenter Turner was the initiator of the campaign to save the Theatre Royal from demolition and redevelopment in the early 1970s. Chronicle, November 30. The former cinema had closed, and the City Council, due no doubt to her advocacy, spotlisted the building. A group consisted of her, with Alderman Stanley Steele and the scientist Barry Richardson, and my father, Geoffrey Gibbons, who secured it for the Winchester Theatre Trust. Imagine Winchester with no city centre theatre, the site now occupied by a decaying 1970s office block. Not just a person of history and writings, but action and achievement too. And it's a lovely picture of Barbara Carpenter Turner with her daughter Clarissa in lovely summer dress, looking Quite challenging, I have to say. I wouldn't want to take her on. I'm well done her getting the theatre. And that's from Tim Gibbons, East Street, Alsford.
House neglected. I write with regard to the letter in the Chronicle of November the 30th, when the future of number 59 Colebrook Street was discussed as a possible home for refugees. Another house that has been empty for many more years is number 7 St Cross Road. This beautiful house in a conservation area just a few hundred yards from the city centre is in a terrible state, with encroaching Mother Nature slowly destroying the outside and unseen but predictable damage on the inside. Although I imagine its owner has to pay council tax, it seems to be beyond the jurisdiction of either the City Council or the City of Winchester Trust to persuade him or her to look after it. This lovely house, which should of course be lived in, is not dying from old age, but from the total neglect of an owner who simply doesn't care. And that's from Rosemary Poole of St James's Villas, Winchester.
And this letter is from Dr. John Lander. November 2025 will mark the 75th anniversary of the final demobilisation of the Women's Land Army, which occurred in 1950. In advance of that, I'm writing the history of the substantial involvement that Hampshire's land girls made in the successful efforts to maintain food production when large numbers of Hampshire's male farm employees were serving in the armed forces. I am particularly keen to make contact with descendants of family members who were members of the land army in Hampshire between 1915 and its disbandment in November 1919. I would be grateful for recollections and photographs for inclusion in the book that is planned to be published towards the end of next year. My email address is jandplander@btinternet.com. And so if any of our listeners have any information or relatives of people that were involved in the land army, then I would encourage them to get in contact with Dr. John Lander, and he's written this from Gravel Lane, Barton Stacey.
And the last letter is headed Dentures Returned, and is written by one of our volunteers, Jane Harding. Reading the Belgarum article about flushing the unflushable, November the 23rd, took me back to my childhood in the 50s in Goring-by-Sea. My brothers would always fish with water guns at the end of the sewage pipe, visible at low tide in those days, and where the fish would hover for food flushing through the sewer. One day, a set of dentures was washed out of the pipe. As our father was the local dentist, my brothers took them home. Sure enough, one of his patients was delighted to receive his dentures back, which he'd flushed down the toilet by mistake. I remember feeling that putting the dentures back into his mouth was even worse than me having to eat the fish caught in the sewage. And that letter from Jane Harding, Back Street, St Cross, Winchester. Now we move on to Chronicle editorial comment, please, Nikki.
Which is headed EV Hub and the Shape of Things to Come. Our front page story reports on the granting of planning permission for an electric vehicle, EV, charging hub on a field at Three Maidens Hill. It is unusual because councillors on the planning committee snubbed their officer's recommendation to reject the scheme. The advice was the land was countryside, even though an anaerobic digester is being built on the adjoining field, and on the site of the EV hub there has been permission granted on appeal in 2022 for a waste recycling centre. Residents of Winchester are going to have to get used to more proposals like this. There is Barton Farm, or King's Barton, of course. Bushfield Camp will be developed as it has been earmarked for a business park for more than 10 years. The question there is only about the size of the scheme. Developers are focusing on South Winchester Golf Club. With the development at Three Maids Hill, the land south towards King's Barton will come under the spotlight. As this newspaper has stated, the city will have to grow to cater for technological change such as electric cars and population growth. Single households are increasing, we are living longer, more of us are getting divorced, and immigrants are arriving often to do the jobs that local people do not want.
Thank you. Now we move on to First Person by George Hayter, I think.
That's correct, yes. And he writes, The Road to Peace. I was still at school when my mother warned me to be wary of Jews. Mum, God bless her, was born in 1919, and when she was growing up in the 1930s, I suppose she was influenced by the nasty rumours. At that time, anti-Semitism was rife in Britain. Her prejudice didn't have much effect on me. After I left home, I met a British Jew who became one of my best friends. I admired Robbie because he was generous and funny, and he had the good sense to laugh at my jokes. We vied to chat up the most attractive women each of us could, but I don't remember either of us being very successful. Robbie invited me home to meet his family, and I went on holiday to Spain with him. I like Robbie, and I like Jewish people. The Western world rightly supports Israel as a safe homeland for Jewish people, largely because the millions of Jews were murdered in Nazi death camps. During the time I knew Robbie, most Britons admired Israel for having overcome surprise attacks by the Arab countries surrounding it. People believed vulnerable Israel was justified when it came to kept some Arab territory it seized on the counterattacks. Israel's occupation of those bits of Jordan, Egypt and Syria was declared illegal by the UN. And since then, Israel has withdrawn from some parts of the captured land. Israel is still hated by Palestinian Arabs living in the territory that remains under Israeli rule. Most of Palestine being taken by Jews arriving from around the world over the last 100 years. Many Arabs have felt themselves forced from their homeland by what they see as unjustifiable Jewish state oppression. Today they live in foreign refugee camps. Many religious Israelis may have innocently added to Palestinian resentment because they believe that they are the chosen people picked by God. A succession of extreme Israeli governments has further stoked Palestinian outrage through policies encouraging Israelis to build homes on Palestinian land. Although moderate Israeli governments have compromised with Arab demands, notably by handing back the Gaza Strip in 2005, terrorists among the Arabs have nevertheless continued murderous attacks on Israel and its citizens. Throughout the conflict, Israelis have killed more Arabs than Arabs have killed Israelis. That's my view of the history. I hope it's fair. I don't remember ever discussing Israel with Robbie, with whom I lost contact years ago. Since then, I have visited Israel twice and enjoyed the young country and its Jewish people. I haven't met many Israeli Arabs, though. I saw Arab-looking locals in Old Jerusalem, but I was too nervous to approach. They looked sullen, and knowing their history, I could understand why. But in the 1980s, I did meet Arabs on the West Bank, the part of Jordan illegally occupied by Israel to this day. I was hitchhiking and got picked up by a car full of men who didn't speak English. I wanted to express admiration for their country, so I did a thumbs up and said, Israel. Whoops, they corrected me. Palestine. By the way, their car radio was tuned to an Arabic voice, interrupted by the chimes of Big Ben. I realised they were getting their news from the BBC World Service. Israelis are rightly proud of the state they have created, but I fear that they fail to understand the depths of hatred that Palestinians feel about being robbed of their homeland. Arab young men particularly feel humiliated that their lives are controlled by hated Israeli invaders. Israel's plan to end Hamas through violence will lead to worse violence. Instead of blowing up thousands of Palestinians in their homes, Israel should respond to the latest Hamas atrocity with less violence than it has suffered. Revenge encourages revenge. If Israel wants peace, I believe it should acknowledge the hurt that it is causing Palestinians and seek amends. And that, as we said, was by George Hayter.
Thank you, Norma. Andrew, I think you've got a couple of items from Belgorum.
Yes, which is an alternative look at the news. Farms on City Edge. The former depot at Bar End on the edge of Winchester will be redeveloped if the City Council gets its way. For many years, it was the base for bin lorries and contractors. The council downsized a few years ago, with the bin men going just round the corner to Barfield Close. What many people don't know, or won't know, is that the depot, which opened in the early 20th century, used to be a farm called Barton Farm. Belgarham is unsure if there were two farms simultaneously called Barton Farm, with the other one off Andover Road and the site of the housing development slowly, very slowly, being built. Around 100 years ago, the farmland at Bar End was converted into a recreational space called Garrison Ground and King George V playing fields. Perhaps the farmer took the name with him on moving. It highlights just how many farms used to be dotted around the edge of Winchester. Others, now no longer active, include Pitt Manor Farm, which has been a golf course since the 1990s, Wharf Farm at Wharf Hill, Abbott's Barton Farm, the so-called housing estate since the 60s, Teg Down Farm, now the Royal Winchester Golf Course, Dykes Farm off Eastern Lane. The only one that Belgarham can think of that is still farmed is St. Cross Farm in Five Bridges Road. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the Bar End depot with the gates closed, a big sign there seeing CCTV in operation, but all looking very, very dilapidated. The second story is about the new bishop, and the city's new bishop is sworn in. The new Bishop of Winchester has taken his seat in the House of Lords. The Right Reverend Philip Monsevan was introduced to the upper chamber in a short ceremony where they swore the oath of allegiance to the King. The 64-year-old joins the Lords Spiritual, who have 26 places reserved in the unelected House of Senior Church of England Bishops, including the Archbishops of Canterbury and York. The senior Anglican cleric, who previously served as Bishop of Truro, was supported in the Lords by the Bishop of Durham, the Right Reverend Paul Butler, and the Bishop of London, the Right Reverend Sarah Mullally. Mr. Mountstephen, whose appointment was announced earlier this year, is the 26th Bishop of the Winchester Diocese, which covers 255 parishes across most of Hampshire, the Isle of Wight, and part of Dorset. He will be formally welcomed at a service of installation in Winchester Cathedral in January. And this one's accompanied by a photograph of the Right Reverend Philip Monsevan, and we welcome him to the cathedral.
Thank you for that. Now we move on to the announcements. Just one announcement this week. It's a Chronicle special offer for readers who want to subscribe to the news site. Excuse me. There's an exclusive offer of £4 for 4 months, 15% off an annual subscription. Digital subscribers have unlimited access to news articles, fewer ads and interruptions, and they can enjoy monthly savings on big brands through the Reader Rewards scheme. Readers can subscribe for just £4 for the first 4 months, or get an annual subscription at only £44. And all you need to do is go to hampshirechronicle.co.uk and go to the subscribe page, and that will help you get those special offers. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 15th of December at 7:13 a.m. and begins at 4:25 p.m. On Wednesday the 20th of December, it ends at 7:21 a.m. and begins at 4:18 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone us on 01962 861 229. And that number is also on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with further items of general news. Nikki.
And this one is headed, Hundreds of Trees Put Up in Town Centre. Alresford is preparing for the festive season with Christmas trees put up through the main thoroughfares. More than 180 trees were placed on buildings by volunteers from the Alresford Chamber of Commerce and the Alresford Pigs Association. The trees require 2,700 bulbs, all of which are now LEDs following a grant from the new Alresford Town Council. They will stay up for approximately 6 weeks before being taken down in the first weekend of January. Each resident, business or organisation pays for their own tree, with all profits going to support local charitable causes and local events for the community. Ian Smith, who helped with putting up the trees, said, "About 30 years ago, Alresford Chamber of Commerce initiated a project to make the town look festive to attract visitors to the town. 20 years ago, the project was taken over by the Alresford Pigs Association, which now runs the project on behalf of the Chamber. There is a vast amount of preparation, but the main event is the trees going up with 35 to 40 volunteers from both organisations helping. Everyone involved loves the project, as do the residents and workers of Alresford, who always comment about how attractive it makes the town feel. It really is a large community endeavour. The Alresford Pigs Association gives financial aid to those in need in the Alresford area. It raises money to do so by organising different events throughout the year, including the Alresford Duck Race, organising traffic control at the Watercress Festival, and organising and performing the arrival of Father Christmas every December. And there's some pictures of them putting up the trees, and particularly of the swan, which has a massive arch over its door, and two Christmas trees. All I can say, it's well worth a visit. It's particularly at night. It looks absolutely wonderful.
And we're still in Alresford with the health centre bid given green light. Planners have permitted scheme to convert an Alresford building into a healthcare practice, despite concerns of the local residents. James Nuttall's plan for Bowland House in West Street was permitted by Winchester City Council Planning Committee on Tuesday, December the 12th. Objections were raised over the site's access to Stiles Yard. Bowland House was previously a showroom and office. The scheme had 10 public objections. The planning officer's report said this will offer private GP and other complementary house care services such as physiotherapy and to serve the community. But resident Andrew White spoke to the committee about potential dangers. He said this will cause danger to pedestrians. Increased footfall will mean more vehicle movements. Even experienced drivers need to use extreme caution. The parking arrangements pose problems for residents of Stiles Yard. Alresford Ward Councillor Margot Power said, "The yard is a dogleg. The only way in and out is via the dogleg, and the pavement in front is very busy. I'm concerned that Hampshire County Council's highways don't see this as a problem. It's a very busy little entrance. I want the building to be used, but we need to make sure it's safe for pedestrians." Mr. Nuttall, the applicant, said the house had been on the market for 18 months and there was no interest for further new office tenants. This has the potential to provide to the Alresford economy. I thank the local residents for their views. The plan is to have 3 parking spaces for staff and a bookable space for disabled access. This will revitalise the building and provide a vital service for local residents. Councillor Michael Reed said, "The building itself will be in good use, but the access is unacceptable." Councillor Jane Rutter, the committee's chairman, said, "This is very narrow, but in the planning terms, we can't use that because of the existing use. The application was permitted by 7 votes, 4 and 2 against."
And continuing our Alresford theme this morning, I assure you it's completely random, but never mind. Anyway, yet another story about Alresford. It's the place to be. Staff members of a recently closed Hampshire Bank marked the occasion with a trip down memory lane. Lloyds Bank in West Street, Alresford, closed its doors for the last time on Monday, November the 27th. A total of 16 former staff members decided to mark the occasion, many of them not having met for more than 36 years. They gathered in the branch to pay homage to the place before moving next door to the Swan Hotel to continue reminiscing. Former staff had been checking with old records of the bank and found that it had become a bank in 1861, when it was most likely the Hampshire Banking Corporation. By 1878, it had become the Hampshire and North Wilts Banking Corporation, but then remained that same year, but then, later that same year, it was renamed the Capital and Counties Bank, and it so remained until 1918, when Lloyds took it over. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the former staff of the bank gathering in the branch for the last time.
And that was the last bank in Alresford. Now there are none. And this is headed Pub Highly Commended in Awards. And it's the Brushmaker's Arms. Meon Valley's MP visited a Hampshire County pub to meet the landlord and landlady. Flick Drummond dropped into the 600-year-old Brushmaker's Arms in Shoe Lane, Upham, which was a highly commended pub in the Countryside Alliance Awards. The pub sources its produce from local farms and food producers. Nikki Taylor and her husband Rhys, who is also the chef, run the pub. Miss Drummond said, "It was nice to meet up with Nikki and Rhys and discuss what they do and the ethos behind it. I know the pub is much loved in the area and well supported too." Nikki said, "Rhys and I were absolutely delighted to come second in the southeast of England in the Countryside Alliance Rural Oscars. It has been a tough few years with COVID and latterly with people not having so much disposable income, so it makes this award all the more worthwhile. We would also like to give a big thanks to our lovely, loyal customers who supported us, and I am one, and it's a wonderful pub."
We are now back in Winchester.
Hooray!
Praise for Lantern Parade. Lanterns were cleverly created for Winchester Cathedral's annual Lantern Parade event. Crowds packed the cathedral on Friday, November the 24th, for the popular free event before parading through the city. Third prize of chocolate went to twins Avli and Rosie Smith, 9, for their turtle doves. Second prize went to the Webster family for their Angel of the Sea boat lantern. And first prize went to the Bailey family for their man sheltering a Dachshund dog lantern.
Lives at risk, fear over the proposed A&E closure. A Romsey councillor has added his voice to the increasing concerns about the potential closure of Winchester's A&E unit. The NHS is consulting on proposals for a new hospital in or near Basingstoke, and the downgrading of some services at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. As part of the multi-million pound development, the RHCH would face the closure of the A&E unit and the change of Florence Portal House to be midwife-led instead of by consultants. The RHCH A&E unit would be replaced by a doctor and nurse-led treatment centre, open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, although the A&E would close, many services will be retained, including a planned surgery unit and an outpatients department. The value of the restructuring and proposed development is estimated at between £700 and £900 million. Councillor Jeff Cooper said, "There are real concerns that the closure of the A&E department at Winchester will put extra pressure on Southampton General. This is particularly worrying as recent figures show that many patients are waiting over 4 hours for treatment at Southampton. To place additional burden on these already overstretched services is unacceptable and puts lives at risk. It is clear that Southampton is already overstretched, and the closure of Winchester will simply add to its pressures." The consultation states that there will be a centre in Winchester, open 24 hours a day for minor injuries, but experience from other parts of the country shows that when this has been promised, the opening hours are soon shortened. I am also concerned about the plans to close the consultant-led maternity unit. It is good that there'll be a midwife-led unit on site, but many women who choose a midwife-led birth like the extra reassurance of having a consultant close at hand, in case things do not go according to plan. Ultimately, this is less choice for women, and our constituents deserve better. Maggie McIsaac, Chief Executive of the NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight Integrated Care Board, said, "These exciting proposals provide a once-in-a-generation opportunity to improve hospital facilities and hospital services and enable our colleagues to provide the very best care for people who need it. The proposals have been designed by clinicians, with patients, and are based on clinical evidence and best practice. At this stage, they are still proposals, and we are keen to hear from people which of the options, how they feel about the options that we are putting forward." And that's also accompanied by a photograph of Councillor Jeff Cooper.
And this headed, "Who's that in a 9-foot alien suit on our TV?" A drama graduate from the University of Winchester has landed on our TV screens recently as a 9-foot-tall green warrior alien in the 60th anniversary of Doctor Who. Actor and puppeteer Stephen Love, who studied contemporary performance at Winchester and graduated in 2013, was hidden within a giant rubber suit and stood on stilts in his role as Roth Warrior, a member of terrifying intergalactic police force who descended upon London in the first of three specials starring David Tennant and Catherine Tate. 6'6", Stephen's stature helped land him the role, as he was a perfect physical match for fellow actor Robert Strange. The pair spent 25 days filming the Doctor Who episode The Star Beast, the first to be produced by Russell T. Davies, on his return to the series. Stephen said, "For my first feature credit, it was pretty full on, but very exciting and so much fun." Before going in front of the camera, Stephen spent 90 minutes in makeup, having a special headpiece glued into place. He then had to keep it on for up to 12 hours. Once inside the rubber Roth outfit, Stephen said farewell to solid food and instead sipped shakes and smoothies through a straw. In 2020, Stephen, who grew up in Basingstoke, formed the Paper Puppets Workshop, based in Winchester, where he now lives. The Star Beast can be seen on BBC iPlayer, and is a wonderful photograph of Stephen Love in character in a terrifying green Roth suit, with flames and cars bursting into flames behind him. I definitely have to watch that.
Students help with hedgehog-friendly litter pick. Staff and students from the University of Winchester have joined the energy and environmental team and taken part in the Big Hog Friendly Litter Pick Challenge. God, that's a mouthful. The litter picks are aimed at helping the city's hedgehog population by cleaning up the neighbourhood and avoiding wildlife getting trapped in litter, leading to injury or even death. Around 20 took part in the two litter picks in November, bagging up 18 sacks of rubbish weighing more than 30 kilograms. The Big Hog Friendly Litter Pick Challenge is run by Hedgehog Friendly Campus and was supported by British Hedgehog Preservation Society, BHPS. Hedgehog numbers are in decline and litter poses a hazard to the prickly creatures. They can get their heads stuck in tins and plastic bags and binders from drinks cans or discarded yoghurt pots. The volunteers ventured out and collected refuse in West Hill Cemetery, Clifton Terrace, Oram's Arbour, Erskine Road, Romsey Road, Nursery Gardens, Millenthorpe Lane, Nursery Gardens and St James's Cemetery. Winchester holds hedgehog-friendly campus gold status from the BHPS. In recent years, students and staff have created hedgehog-friendly habitats, set up feeding stations, and helped to survey hedgehog activity on campus. In cooperation with the neighbouring Royal Hampshire County Hospital, the university also installed the city's first road signs requesting drivers to slow down and beware of hedgehogs crossing. That's sensible. And then there's a lovely picture of all the students in their high-vis jackets and with their litter-picking sticks, all smiling happily outside the campus.
Working to restore a fallen historic wall. Winchester City Council has confirmed that work to rebuild a historic wall which collapsed 2 years ago is underway. A section of the wall fell on the path between King Alfred Terrace and King Alfred Place in Hyde on July the 6th, 2021. The section was close to the West Hill House on Hyde Gate. It's not known how old the wall is, but it contains stones from Hyde Abbey, the final resting place of King Alfred the Great, which once stood nearby. The City Council has been undertaking preparatory works to repair the wall, with the archaeological work and structural assessments, and with the final work expected to take place over the summer of next year. A spokesman for Winchester City Council said, "The works will retain the historic character of the wall by reusing as much of the existing material as possible, and matching the original style, which is visible on the remaining wall sections. Some additional support is likely to be required to ensure the stability and strength of the wall, and this will be as in keeping with and sympathetic to the original wall as possible. Subject to the relevant permissions, we anticipate that the rebuilding will begin early in the summer of next year, when weather will be more favourable for the repair works." The council was asked why it had taken so long for the work to be started, but it did not respond to the inquiry. With specialist works of this nature, there'll be a limited number of contractors in the UK able to carry out the works, and they are in high demand, so it has taken time to get to where we are now. At the same time, the council is under immense cost pressures to ensure it is doing things as cost-efficiently as possible. It's important these sort of archaeological projects aren't rushed, as they are so important to Winchester. Such walls are beautiful, quintessential features of Hyde and should be designed to stand for hundreds of years for future generations. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the collapsed wall, which alas just looks like a pile of rubble at the moment, and covering the pathway, with council workers standing looking on.
"And this headed, I'm happy to be here," says D-Day veteran 100. A Winchester man who served on D-Day has celebrated his 100th birthday. James Nairn turned 100 on Thursday, December the 7th. He's the younger brother of Sir Patrick Nairn, who died in 2013. He was born in Belfast, where he spent 6 years before his family moved to Scotland. He spent much of his childhood travelling to different parts of the UK, including Milford-on-Sea and Devizes, where he received a preparatory school education. Mr. Nairn joined the army in 1944, where he served with the Seaforth Highlanders alongside his brother and father. He would later serve in the D-Day landings in Normandy. He said, "It was all kept very secret, but everyone knew we would be invading Normandy. I think even the Germans suspected it on some level. Training for it was quite intensive. We had to run up and down hills while carrying rifles and equipment and in large platoons to prepare, all while we were being shouted at by our instructors. The actual landings weren't too bad. We had quite a few casualties, but it was mainly people who were wounded. We didn't have that many deaths, as I recall." James of Christchurch Road also served in Aden and Malaya during the war. Following World War II, James served as a Royal Messenger until 1988. During this time, he delivered important documents in British embassies, high commissions and consulates around the world, flying on Concorde twice. He left the position in 1988 and has lived in Winchester for the past 45 years. He's never married and has no children. James celebrated his birthday with his family, including several nephews and nieces. He also enjoyed a special performance by the choir at Winchester Cathedral. When asked what has changed the most throughout his life, James said, "Oh, everything has become far more mechanised and joined up. I don't have any secrets for getting to 100, although I'm happy to be there." And there's a wonderful picture of him in 1945, presumably looking very debonair and smooth, and happily living in Winchester still.
Makers raise more than £1,000. The Wessex Quilt Makers raised more than £1,000 for Winchester Hospice earlier this year. The Winchester-based group held an exhibition as part of the Michaelmas Fair in the Hospital of St Cross. They raffled a quilt, part of which was made by long-standing member Brenda Lothian, who died at the hospice last year. A cheque for £1,071 was presented to Joe Westerman from the hospice at one of the Wessex Quilters' recent meetings. And there's a lovely picture of a large group of quilters handing over the cheque.
Concerns over the loss of diseased trees. Residents of Compton have raised concerns after a large number of trees on Hurdle Way were felled. The felling began 2 weeks ago and has been carried out by subcontractors, Groundlord, working for Hampshire County Council. Residents were told it was being undertaken to stop the spread of ash dieback, which had been detected in the area. However, some were worried that the trees were being removed as a prelude to new development. Una Stevens of Cliff Way is one such resident, and she told the Chronicle, "There's been a hell of a lot of felling. Looking at the huge pile of trunks that were piled up, they don't look like diseased trees to me, and I am a seasoned gardener. I spoke to a few neighbours, and they agreed with me. The trees looked perfectly sound. We are very concerned at the scale of what has been taken down. I am not convinced, and nor are the others, that they're all ash trees, and what is worrying us is that there is so much clearance taking place that it could be the next site of development in Compton." Mrs. Stevens said that residents had not received prior notification that the trees were to be felled, and that several hedgerows had also been damaged during the felling. A spokesperson for Hampshire County Council said, "Around 50 to 60 trees on Hurdle Way in Compton were recently removed for safety reasons, as the trees were in an advanced state of ash dieback. And once ash dieback has affected an ash tree, it can be at considerable risk of structural failure, leading to falling branches and limbs, or the whole tree may collapse. A number of public footpaths pass through this area and are used by local people, so the decision was taken to remove the infected trees to remove these risks. The area, which is on County Council-owned farmland, will be replanted with replacement trees in the coming months, whilst verges will be restored and other damaged ground will be reinstated. The removal work is now complete. However, there are other ash trees in the area which will continue to be monitored. Felling of this scale is always a last resort and would normally be notified to local residents in advance. And we are sorry that on this occasion, this communication did not take place." And this is accompanied by a photograph of the road in Compton showing the work taking place and the trees being felled.
And this headed, "Restaurant reopened 6 months after closure. Apologies for my mispronunciation. I've no idea how to pronounce this. A Winchester Greek restaurant has finally reopened 6 months from a sudden closure. Yaya's Kitchen, Y-I-A-Y-I-A-S, in St. George's Street, closed before the summer with no explanation. It initially opened last December, taking over from Tom's Deli, which occupied the premises for more than 30 years. After months of speculation, the restaurant has reopened with its owner, Paul Paragoudis, thanking the public for their patience. Mr. Paragoudis, 41, said, "We had to close due to unreconcilable differences with a former business partner. After that, I had to make a decision to either walk away or try and resurrect it. It was my baby from the beginning. Even though we had just a short time in Winchester, it was lovely. I really enjoyed it. I really wanted to spend the summer out on the terrace, but it wasn't to be. It was tough not being here. I can't praise Winchester City Council enough. They're the best council I've ever worked with." And there's a great picture of Mr. Paul Pargoudis, outside his restaurant, rolled up sleeves, leather flat cap, dark grey shirt, and the restaurant full of people.
Reasons to be cheerful in city. Winchester community spirit has been given as one of the reasons behind its being named the second happiest place to live in Great Britain. The ancient capital featured just behind Richmond upon Thames in the list and was Hampshire's only representative in the top 20. Rightmove's 12th annual Happy at Home Index asked residents how they feel about their area and was completed this year by over 26,000 people. The study found that the feeling of sense of pride, belonging and community is most likely to contribute to the feeling of happy to live in the area, more so than having access to things like public transport, schools and job opportunities. Reacting to the news, Fiona Smith, 79, of Bourne Fields, Twyford, said, "Winchester has changed, but it's still a happy place and I've lived in the area since I was 10 years old. I mostly teach at Pilgrim School and I love it. The boys become friends and I do think Winchester deserves its place as one of the happiest places. We've got the college and the cathedral and I've just been into town and all the people are so sweet and lovely. It's a community." Javed Akhtar runs Javadi's Dry Cleaners in Upper Brook Street, and Mr. Akhtar, 56, lives in Basingstoke, and he said, "I can't for certain say it's the happiest, but it's definitely a great place. I have something to judge it against. I don't think people are unhappier in Basingstoke. They're more vocal in Winchester, but it's a great place to be." Tom Harvey, 38, runs menswear shop Suave Owl in High Street, which opened earlier this year. Mr. Harvey lives in Bath and commutes to the shop each day. He said, "You can definitely feel the community vibe, and I think that leads it to it being a happy place. Everyone knows everyone. There's a noticeable difference between Bath and here. Bath is very much dog-eat-dog. People here are nicer." Winchester's average asking price for a house during the 2023 was $571,613 and the average asking rate per calendar month was £2,097. And there is a picture of Tony Harvey, Fiona Smith and Javed Akhtar all looking smiling and happy.
I always think when you talk about average house prices that my first house cost about £6,000. But we're moving on from that. Yeah. Kitchen Design Studio wins National Award. The Myers Touch Kitchen Design Studio in Kingsworthy has won the Kitchen Retailer of the Year Award for the second consecutive year at the 2023 KBB Focus Industry Awards. The gala event took place at The Brewery, London, on Thursday, November the 30th. The KBB Focus Awards marked a year of retail, design and manufacturing excellence. The awards were selected by the judging panel, followed by entertainment and a three-course meal. The KBB Focus is a resource for independent kitchen and bathroom retailers and designers to find industry news coverage, new product launches, and trend updates. Celebrating its 20-year anniversary, the Myers Touch was founded by husband and wife team Keith and Helena Myers in 2003, with the aim to provide a premium design studio that creates bespoke kitchen living spaces with exceptional customer service. Judges said the award recognizes how their studio has evolved and adapted to customer needs by offering new assets, experiences, brands, and displays that align with industry and retailer trends. In the past 12 months, the Myers Touch has commissioned a complete redesign of its website and remodeled its studio space to introduce three new European brands. Its first new kitchen brand is the business's in-house range called Mobilife, an entry-level contemporary German-made collection with a variety of high-quality cabinetry finishes, styles and materials. The second new brand partner is Coppat Life, an Italian kitchen manufacturer, which appeals to customers who want an exclusive mid-entry contemporary Italian-style kitchen. And the third new partner brand is Eggersmann, renowned internationally for its innovation and luxury finishes, and ideal for those homeowners looking for a premium German-made kitchen. Mr. Myers said, "Our team is thrilled and honored to win the National KBB Focus Kitchen Retailer of the Year Award for the second year running. The vision for our studio remodeling was to offer new ranges of personalized kitchens to match a wider style, a wider range of styles and budgets, and reflect the uniqueness of each client." And this is accompanied by Mr. and Mrs. Myers and the rest of their staff sitting outside their design studio in Kingsworthy.
Ramblers tackle overgrown country footpath. Winchester Ramblers have been back at work clearing local footpaths with a team of volunteers recently working on an overgrown and impassable right-of-way between Kilmerston and Riversdown Road. The team of eight volunteers carried heavy tools and equipment on a half-mile muddy track to the worksite to tackle the job, but the weather was kind and the pathway was cleared again in just a few hours. Derek Weaver, the Ramblers Path Maintenance Officer, said thanks to the hard work of our team, the weather and the refreshments, a good day was enjoyed with the satisfaction of a recovered path. Three reports reported rights-of-way issues closed and a lot of happy walkers. As well as their national campaigning work and regular local work parties, Winchester Ramblers run a programme of walks every week throughout the year and are always happy to welcome new members, young and old. More details can be found at www.ramblers.org.uk/go-walking/ramblers-groups/Winchester Group. But far more interesting is the person in the middle of this picture, who's our very own Keith Vincent, whose dulcet tones you will hear presenting this recording.
Yes, we were there, but we did enjoy the mince pies. That was the important, that was the thing that kept us going.
Yeah, well done.
Science Centre lights up indoors to back NSPCC. As landmarks across the UK are set to light up green on the longest night of the year in support of the NSPCC, the charity is calling on the public to rally friends and family to take part in a walk for children. Buildings and landmarks will be going green on the night of December the 22nd in support of the children's charity. But in Winchester, something slightly different will be taking place. Due to being a dark sky reserve, Winchester Science Centre is unable to light up like others taking part. Instead, its team will be lighting up inside the centre with a showcase of green fire experiments. The demos, which will be taking place for free in the Science Live area of the centre, will involve using copper chloride and a flamethrower to create a vibrant green flames. Ben Ward, Chief Executive of Wonder Seekers, the charity behind Winchester Science Centre, said, "We challenged our inspirers to find a way to use science to light up the centre green, and as usual, they did not disappoint. Our charity, Wonder Seekers, is on a mission to empower all children through science, so we are thrilled to be able to support the NSPCC with raising awareness of their Christmas appeal." Gemma Graves, NSPCC's Community Fundraising Manager for Hampshire, said, "We are so grateful to all the organisations lighting up their buildings green after the for the NSPCC, especially Winchester Science Centre, for finding such an inventive way to join in the support."
This story is entitled "Brass Band Has a Baby Boom Boost." And it always, for me, I can never figure out whether this is coincidence or correlation, but never mind, here we go. The Otterbourne Brass Band is celebrating its centenary in style by increasing its membership. but there may be a bit of a wait before the latest arrivals can start making music. In just 6 weeks, the band has welcomed 3 new babies. First came Octavia Rose Lockett, born to euphonium player Connor and his wife Rosalind on August the 15th at a very healthy 8 pounds 5 ounces. She was followed by Eleanor Kate, born to the baritone player Harriet and husband Edward on September the 18th at 7 pounds 15 ounces. And to complete the musical trio, Chester Roland Mullen arrived on September the 29th, weighing in at 6 pounds 4 ounces, born to the band's flugelhorn player Amelia and her husband Robert. The band performed a Lest We Forget remembrance tribute concert to mark the sacrifices made by the armed forces on Sunday, November the 12th. And the group was due to give its Christmas concert at Otterbourne Village Hall on Saturday, December the 9th. And this is accompanied by a whole series of photographs. So there's baby Octavia with granddad, resplendent in the red jacket uniform of the band, with mum. Then there's Amelia Mullen and baby Chester. And then we have Harriet with baby Eleanor, Theodore, and husband Edward. And then there's a variety of pictures of them, of the band. I wasn't aware there was, it's actually quite a large brass band. Anyway, if we're anywhere close to Otterbourne Village Hall on Saturday, December the 9th, which has already been gone.
we missed that one. We all missed it.
Those of you that made it, congratulations. The rest, we all missed it.
Mary loved her life of laughter on the buses. Winchester's first female bus driver said she loved every minute of her career 50 years on from getting her licence. Mary Curry was one of 2 King Alfred female conductors who applied to be trained as bus drivers with the Hampshire and Dorset Company in 1973. The 83-year-old of Pound Lane, Meanstoke, recalled that she completed her training on an old Bristol double-decker built in the early 1950s. Mastering the vehicle meant being able to turn the heavy steering wheel and manage the crash gearbox with its big lever and heavy clutch pedal. Mary went on to use her license for 34 years until she reached the age of 68 in 2007. She worked as a driver for a good few years before spending time as a cleaner and shunter at the depot. She reverted to being a driver, conductor, and later went back into the garage. Although she did not renew her passenger and commercial vehicle driving license in 2007, she continued to work for Stagecoach at the depot at Bar End until retiring in 2019 at the age of 80. Mary comes originally from Tilford in Surrey, but moved to the Winchester area in 1948. In 1961, she joined King Alfred as a conductor. Looking back at how her career started, Mary said, "My mother and I took the bus to Farnham in about 1945, and we broke down outside a pub. The driver and conductor people had people in fits of laughter. That was it. From that moment, I wanted to work on the buses. I told my father, who flew into a fit of rage. He told me, 'No daughter of mine is going to work on the buses.' I have loved every minute of it. Driving in Winchester was fine. I didn't mind it. Being a conductor was good. We had fun and lots of laughs. When I first started, North Walls was two-way traffic. We had the best days. The King Alfred buses are out and about in the city, giving free rides on New Year's Day, starting from the Broadway with its focus on King Alfred vehicles operating on their traditional routes. The free bus services will start with the first departure from Winchester Broadway at 9:10 a.m. There will be frequent services throughout the day with the last buses departing at 4:15 p.m. A full programme and timetables will be on sale from programme sellers in the Broadway." And there's lovely pictures, one of Mary stepping up into the bus on the day of passing her test in 1973, and another of her posing now, aged 80, on, again, one of the buses, looking great.
Enjoying taking the trail to Marwell's Magic of Glow. There are some advantages to shorter December days. Being able to go to magical light trails enjoy the spectacle and get home in time for dinner and a reasonable bedtime is one of the best. And with light rail seemingly en vogue this winter, we took a trip to one of Hampshire's biggest to see what it was all about. Marwell Zoo has been opening up its grounds to host visitors after dark for Christmas events for the past few years. This year, Glow Marwell has returned with double the amount of lights, 500,000 to be precise, and it promises light displays, festive offerings and the magic of Glow. We visited it on its opening night and were not disappointed. Marwell's trail takes you around most of the park, taking guests up to the cafe near the meerkats and then along the path past the manor before cutting back down past the hippo house. Don't worry, all the animals are tucked up in bed with lighting directed away from the enclosures. There are signs reminding visitors to be quiet, and the music, unlike other light trails events, is not glaring and loud. Staff are also using thermal vision and CCTV to make sure the animals are okay throughout the events, which also finish early enough for everyone, animals included, to get a good night's rest. Our trip starts with a visit to the big man himself, with Santa's grotto set up in a building near the entrance. The visit cost £10 per child. We then set off round the park, and there were so many things to look at. You really get your money's worth. A field of lit up flowers, moving butterflies, an illuminated play park, a tunnel of lights and a multicoloured light tunnel. There's lots to take in before our first pit stop at the cafe for a hot dog. Afterwards, along the path in front of the manor house, there's the enchanted tree and the other lights leading us to the house, which is a protected display on its front, and performers adding to the spectacle. It would be rude not to enjoy a glass of mulled wine here. Before then, on to the fire pits to toast marshmallows. We stopped to play in the shadows lamps before heading down the Rainbow Road, stopping to gaze at the woodland projections before some real, snow. The children run through carefree while the adults enjoy the music and lights. Such a nice way to start Christmas, and one that all ages would enjoy. Perhaps they are angels. Marwell Zoo events run from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. with last entry at 6 p.m. Premium tickets cost £19 per adult, £17 per child, with the under threes free. Standard tickets cost £19 for adults, £15 for children, and it runs until December the 30th. Father Christmas grotto tickets cost £10 per child. Check the website for dates. For more information, menus and ticket information, go to marwell.org.uk. And there are some lovely pictures, and the one that really, really is sensational. It's a pair of angel wings, and they're in rainbow colours with red, yellow, green and blue. And they're on a wall, and there's a plinth in front of it. So you can sit on the plinth, and it looks as though you've got these lovely angel wings behind you. And there's a little girl sitting there, and it's just enchanting. And then there's a lovely big lit circle with two children sitting on it. And there's Father Christmas with his two visitors, and there's a picture of the light tunnel, and there's a picture of Christmas trees, and there's also a couple of reindeers that are highlighted with yellow faces and white bodies. It's absolutely enchanting, but the one that really takes your attention are the angel wings.
This is one of the articles that I sometimes have a question mark about, but never mind. It's called Electric Car Events. Two Hampshire hotels hosted events that allowed women to find out more about making the switch to electric cars. The events, called She's Electric, took place on Saturday, November the 18th, at Leinston House in Sparshalt, and Sunday, November the 19th, at Rhinefield House in Brockenhurst. It's part of an initiative which seeks to empower and inspire women to live a more sustainable lifestyle through the purchases they make, and it attracted scores of women to both sessions. Former editor of Glamour magazine and editor of You, Joe Elvin, and automotive expert and journalist Erin Baker, hosted the events. Gemma Walker, a co-founder, said, "We were thrilled at the turnout at Leinston House in Winchester and Rhinefield House in the New Forest. As a Lymington resident, it was a particular pleasure to see a few women I recognised from local businesses and the school run in the mix with everyone else that came along. As our events in Buckinghamshire, Warwickshire and Gloucestershire, we were overwhelmed, not just by the turnout, but by the attendees' delight in discovering the event and their genuine interest in the subject matter. We were confident that women would want to know more about making the switch when we started She's Electric. But it has been wonderful and reassuring to see and hear it in real life. We are already looking forward to the 2024 series." And I'm being looked at with a very frown by one of my ladies.
What is your problem with this?
I mean, it should be not that one is encouraging women to do this. It should be encouraging anybody. Surely.
Well, we're getting some looks across the table.
I think we're in trouble. This one is Candidate Meets Inspiring Education Leaders. Winchester's Liberal Democrat election candidate met two of the city's inspiring education leaders. Danny Chambers met Peter Simmons principal Sarah Russell and St Swithin's head teacher Jane Gandhi. Mr Chambers said, "I spent part of my career teaching at university, so I've held a long interest in education and ensuring young people can reach their full potential. I really enjoyed meeting the heads of both Peter Simmons and St Swithin's to learn more about their education institutions. They are both incredibly inspiring individuals who have fostered a culture of inclusivity and high expectations. I also got to spend time discussing politics with pupils at St Swithin's. It was interesting to hear about the issues about which they are most passionate, preventing climate change and supporting mental health. These are two issues close to my heart with my background in science and as a trustee of a mental health charity." And there are two pictures of Danny Chambers with Jane Gandhi and Sarah Russell.
Survey on police costs. The Police and Crime Commissioner called on residents to give their views on the amount of support given to policing through council tax. Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones called for residents to take an online survey to give their views on whether there should be an increase in council tax, which residents pay in support of policing, to ensure continued investment in the Hampshire and the Isle of Wight Constabulary. The online consultation, which can be found at Precept 2024/25 Hampshire and Isle of Wight online survey, closed on Sunday, December the 10th. Ms Jones said, "As Police and Crime Commissioner, I'm responsible for the policing budget and I also represent the public in how policing priorities are set and how they are delivered. So I need the public's thoughts and feedback in order to make these key decisions. For the last financial year, the increase in council tax funded the recruitment of 50 more police officers in addition to the 600 new police officers I pledged when I was elected as Police and Crime Commissioner 2 years ago. How much the public wants to contribute to policing for the next financial year helps me to ensure that Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary delivers the services that you expect. So your views on where you want your money to be spent and the crimes that matter to you the most are vital. The biggest pressures on police budgets are police officer and staff wage increases, as well as the cost of items such as fuel and the purchase of police cars and uniforms."
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors for selecting the extracts and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks, of course, to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye and happy Christmas.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And for me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. Now, there will be a recording next week, but of course, as it will go out on Friday afternoon, it may not arrive with you before Christmas. So from all of us at Winchester Talking Newspaper, we wish you a very happy Christmas. And the Christmas magazine recording will be sent out with this week's newspaper recording, so there'll be a second recording in the wallet. So when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you, and
happy Christmas!